Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
This happened in my early 20s. My name is Holly, and I work in a Burger King drive-thru to pay my bills. I ran away from home with my high school boyfriend, Mark. We thought about making a life here in L.A., but as soon as we reached here, he changed drastically. He got into drugs, then got caught cheating, so my foolish teen self, who left high school and her family for love, went through a rough patch in the beginning years after shifting to L.A. With no qualification and being a high school dropout, this is the only job that I could land on. I shared a room with another girl in a cheap apartment, and she was the one who helped me get this job. The drive-thru was located in a secluded area right across the highway. Though it was 10 minutes away from my house, I had to walk amidst the woods to get there. Hence, sometimes I had to work night shifts, and walk amidst the dark woods often made me nervous. I always carried pepper spray and a hunting knife in my bag so that I could at least defend myself in the worst situations possible. Luckily, I never had to use any of these for 8 months straight after joining Until One Time, which I'm about to share with you all. It was a summer evening, and I was going for my night shift. I could hear the frogs and crickets singing as I made my way through the woods. The eerie background music, accompanied by my footsteps crushing the dry leaves, made me feel I wasn't alone. I was constantly looking back out of discomfort, thinking someone was following me. But not once did I see a single person. When I reached the highway and saw the Burger King banner shining on the drive-thru setup, my breathing got normal. I crossed the road and walked in. This happened to be a small outlet, hence three employees worked three shifts in turn. The guy who worked before me came out and handed me the keys. We chatted for a bit about work and stuff, then he went home riding his scooter. I stood near the window of the counter and watched his blue motorcycle fade out in the dark. Suddenly, my phone rang, and I saw it was my roommate, Missy. Did you reach? Yes. Safely. Again. Good for you. Missy always checked on me in her cute way, and I couldn't thank her enough for being so caring the entire time I stayed with her. So after the previous guy left, I sat down on the counter and started looking at my phone. Generally, on weekdays, the sales happen to be less in the night shifts. It's mostly 3 to 4 customers. For the next 3 hours, 5 customers came in. I watched some videos on YouTube for a while, then probably dozed off in my seat. It was around 1:30 in the morning when a loud car horn honked right next to my window, and I almost jumped from my seat. I saw a green Chevy standing near the window and a man sitting on the driver's seat wearing beach shorts and nothing else. He wore 3 to 4 gold chains and red sunglasses. The entire appearance made him look so odd and funny at the same time. Even though it was a warm summer night, there wasn't any reason for this man to go shirtless. Without wasting any more time, I said in a humble voice, "Welcome to Burger King. May I take your order, please?" "That's what I've been waiting for the last few minutes." I got extremely embarrassed, realizing I dozed off during my shift. "Oh, I am sorry. I was just a bit tired. Excuse me for this mistake."
"Let it be. Just take the order."
Thinking he had already waited enough, I stopped beating around the bush and started to take his order without any chit-chat.
2 single barbecue beef bacon, 3 Whoppers with cheese, onion rings, 6-piece nuggets, French fries, and a Hershey's sundae pie.
I was a bit confused seeing such a huge order for a single person, but then I thought, it's none of my business. I told him to give me some time to prepare his order. He didn't say anything, just smiled and sat in his car. Needless to say, that was the biggest order of the night, so I got a bit restless. Also, I have wasted his time already, which makes me fidget more in my duty. As if all this tension wasn't enough, the guy kept watching me like a hawk. He was scanning my every move. Realizing I will take some more time, he played loud rap music in his car to kill his time. If it was other times, I surely would have told him to turn it off, but I kept my calm and went on with my work. I could see him smiling at me and checking me out in a very creepy way. After finishing and packing his entire order, I handed him over a big bag filled with food. He rushed his fingers through my wrist while taking the order from me. I calculated his bill and handed him the slip to make the payment. Without taking his eyes off me, he took out his wallet and said,
"You know, a girl like you shouldn't be working so hard. What's your name?"
It's fine. I like this job. Also, I don't feel very comfortable providing personal information to strangers." My outright rejection shocked him, as he wasn't expecting me to be so confrontational in his face. A surprised anger lurked in his wide eyes, and he took out dollar bills from his wallet. What he did next was beyond any human being's imagination. Before handing me the dollars, he spat on his palms, then rubbed the spit on both sides of his hands and the dollar notes while giving a cruel, mean smile. I was completely disgusted with this behavior, so I screamed, "What the hell is wrong with you?" "With me? I wasn't being rude, even though you made me wait. Then why didn't you answer like that when I asked your name? If you want to be rude with me, then this is what you get, lady. Listen, scumbag, if you give me this lady shit one more time, I will smash the ketchup machine in your face. Now, either you pay me like a human being, or I am calling the cops on you. I already have your plate number and footage in the security cam. So what's it gonna be?" He lifted his body out of the car window and came extremely near my face. I was about to shit my pants, but I still kept my firm demeanor to show him that I am not scared of him. Giving me a crooked smile, he said,
"You don't know who you are threatening, lady. Anyways, let's do it your way."
He handed me his wallet and said,
"Take as much as you want, and don't worry, I won't even lay my hands on your dirty skin for that."
Tears rolled down my eyes, and without saying anything, I slapped him hard on the face. Receiving a tight slap, he got shaken immediately and pulled himself back in the car. I then shut the window so that he couldn't reach out to me again.
"You bitch! I was being nice to you, and this is how you paid me? This world sucks up girls like you, you know? One day, you are alive, and the next day, your body will be found chopped off in those dark woods. You will pay for this."
Saying this, he drove off at full speed, and I collapsed on the floor, sobbing terribly. After crying a pool of tears, I managed to call the owner and then my roommate. The owner apologized to me and told me to go home immediately. He said he will report this guy to the police first thing in the morning. Missy told me to come home ASAP. Without wasting any more time, I got my stuff, locked the outlet, and started to walk home. For the first time in my life walking amidst these woods, I felt like I will die in here. The sound of a hooting owl made my heart skip a beat each time. I went on for 7 minutes straight without any trouble, but suddenly, a bush nearby started to shake violently. Shocking the hell out of me, that crazy customer came out from that bush. His face was smeared with mustard and ketchup, which made him look insane. No doubt, he ate the food he bought a few moments back. He then laughed at me and said, "Here comes the big bash." And saying this, he shoved his hand inside his mouth and started to gag bizarrely. It took me some moments to realize what he was up to. He gagged like this for a bit more and then started vomiting like crazy. Everything that he ordered came out in its worst form. The even more psychotic thing was how he laughed in between his puking parade. A foul stench of vomit filled the air around me, and screaming at the top of my lungs, I started to run like crazy. I had no idea where I was going. I just ran as far as I could from this freak show. I must have fainted from the trauma, and a patrolling police car spotted me lying unconscious on the side of the highway. When I woke up at the hospital, all I could do was cry, realizing that I am still alive. I don't know what that man tried to do that night, but I no longer take night shifts in Burger King. Hey guys, I hope you're enjoying the video. If so, please leave a like. And also, a small percentage of people that watch my videos are actually subscribed. If you want to support this channel and make this channel reach the 1 million mark, please consider subscribing. It's free and you can change your mind later. Enjoy. The incident took place on April 3rd, 1997, in Itaewon, Seoul. Jo Jung Pil, a 22-year-old college student who was on a date with his girlfriend, headed to Itaewon to pick up his girlfriend, and he was in a hurry to go to the bathroom. So he went with his girlfriend to a Burger King on the main road. And while he was going to the bathroom, his girlfriend ordered a hamburger and waited for Mr. Jeongpil. However, after 5 or 10 minutes, Jeongpil didn't come back. And at the time, a man came out from the bathroom covering his mouth. Feeling something strange, the girlfriend headed to the bathroom and got shocked seeing Mr. Jeongpil lying in the inner corner of the bathroom in a sea of blood. Jeongpil's neck was full of stab wounds, and blood was all over his clothes. She realized he had already stopped breathing a while ago. This case is known as the Itaewon murder case. Jeongpil, who has never missed first or second place in the entire school and never rotted inside, is the youngest among one son and three daughters, and the third generation reader. He grew up receiving a lot of love in his family, but he suffered such an absurd death. The next day after this incident, the U.S. military unit received a report that someone had seen a young boy named Patterson stabbing a man. Patterson was immediately arrested, and the case was all set to be resolved smoothly. However, Patterson admitted that the crime was committed by his friend Eddie, not himself. He said he went to the hamburger shop downstairs because he was hungry after drinking with friends at a club in Itaewon on the day of the incident. And then, a Korean man went into the bathroom, and Eddie said, "Let's go to the bathroom because I'll show you something cool." Then Eddie stabbed the victim to death. Investigators rushed to Eddie's house to arrest him. However, he was meeting with a lawyer at the time and was questioned after his voluntary appearance. And Eddie's statement was the exact opposite of Patterson's. He said that Patterson had something to show him and asked him to go to the bathroom. And as he was going to wash his hands, he followed him. While he was washing his hands, Patterson kept stabbing Mr. Jeongpil, and Eddie said the scene was unbelievable and felt like he was watching a movie. Due to the conflicting statements and blame game played by the two, the U.S. criminal investigation team summoned friends who were with them that night to investigate. Their friends told shocking stories. After the hamburgers got served to their table, Patterson pulled a jackknife out of his pocket. This was the same knife used in the crime. Then Eddie said to Patterson, "Hey, have you stabbed a person with a knife before? Go and stab someone." At that moment, Jeongpil went to the bathroom, and these two people followed him with some serious sick minds. But after coming out of the bathroom, the behavior of these two men was quite different. Eddie came up to the club, but his white shirt was covered in blood, as if he had been sprayed with it. And he said, "We stabbed a man in the neck with a knife." His friends were shaken and went to the bathroom to find Mr. Jeongpil was lying there. When friends asked him, "Did you kill someone?" Eddie said, "It's not me. Patterson did it just for fun." On the other hand, Patterson left the bathroom and went to the club's bathroom without returning to the club. Patterson, whose head, shirt, pants, and hands were bloody, hurriedly drained the blood into the bathroom, changed into a friend's clothes, borrowed a hat, and left the club in a hurry. Then he returned to the U.S. military base, burned his blood-stained shirt, and even destroyed evidence by throwing the knife into the sewer that he used in the crime. Their friends also revealed that Patterson was a member of a gang called Naughty 14, and that the gang's attack method was similar to the murder of Mr. Jeongpil. The U.S. investigator was convinced that the culprit was Patterson and handed over the findings to the South Korean prosecutors. But the case took an unexpected turn. Prosecutor Park, a veteran who had handled more than 100 murders alone, couldn't believe the investigation by the U.S. investigator. So he reinvestigated the case from the beginning and was convinced that the killer was Eddie. He had three reasons to think that Eddie was the culprit. One of them is the memory of a murderer. He paid attention to the difference between Eddie, who was surprised at the time that he couldn't remember the specifics, and Patterson, who remembered everything in detail, including the attack site, the crime method, and the number of attacks. And he said, "When you stab a person with a knife and see blood, it is common sense in criminal psychology that you lose your temper and cannot remember what happened after that." He said, "Based on this common theory, we can point out the fact that Eddie, who failed to give the details in the beginning of the interrogation, is the murderer." However, criminal psychology experts were puzzled by Prosecutor Park's opinion. Professor Lee Soo-jeong agrees that the criminal's memory is inaccurate. He further added, "I am making such statements because I have sensory information that I feel in my fingers. Eyewitnesses do not make such statements. Prosecutor Park paid attention to the opinion of the forensic scientist who was in charge of the autopsy, saying, "The perpetrator is likely to be taller than the victim. Also, since there are no signs of defense, the perpetrator seems to be strong enough to subdue the victim." Prosecutor Park thought the culprit was not Patterson, who was 172 centimeters tall and 63 kilograms in weight, but Eddie, who was 180 centimeters tall and weighed 105 kilograms. The forensic scientist said, "I was talking about the possibility, but Prosecutor Park's thoughts were already tilted." And finally, the reason that Prosecutor Park had no choice but to be sure was the lie detector. He asked Patterson and Eddie the same question. "Are you the one who stabbed Zhou Zhengpiel?" And both denied the crime and pointed out the other as the culprit. But the polygraph's results were different. Agitated Eddie and stable Patterson. The detector revealed that Eddie lied and Patterson told the truth. If you are nervous, you may get a false reaction even though it is true. And in the case of a sociopath, the results of a lie detector that could not be detected was not accepted as evidence in court. However, Prosecutor Park believed this result 100% and concluded that Eddie was the murderer. Prosecutors charged Eddie with murder and Patterson with possession of a weapon and destruction of evidence. Even in court, the two statements continued to contradict each other, two people claiming to be the culprits. However, as a result of the first trial, Eddie was sentenced to life in prison and Patterson was sentenced to only 1 year and 6 months in prison for destroying evidence. However, much has been said about this verdict. Patterson and Eddie are 17 years old, with a maximum sentence of 20 years in court. But the judge sentenced them to life in prison. However, it was revealed that this was an error caused by ignorance of the law and not for any other reason. This was corrected in the second trial. Eddie was sentenced to 20 years in prison for murder, and Patterson was sentenced to 1 year and 6 months in prison. However, this decision was again overturned by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court held a trial again, saying that there was insufficient evidence that Eddie was a murderer, and Eddie was acquitted at the trial again. If Eddie isn't the culprit is Patterson. However, Patterson, who had to be held captive, had already been released after serving his sentence. Patterson, who received a suspended sentence, was released before Eddie's trial was over. Suspension of execution is possible only when life in prison is impossible, and the reason for this permission is determined. But Patterson was nowhere to be found. In response, the National Assembly asked the Minister of Justice why the sentence was suspended for him. However, he could not give an accurate answer, saying, "I think it was best based on the behavioral record." In this situation, the injustice of the victims' families only worsened. Zhengpiel's mother filed a complaint asking Patterson to be punished, but he had already left Korea. Patterson, who had been suspended from departure, took a flight confidently at the airport and departed in August 1999. How the hell did this happen? The prosecutor was unaware of Patterson's departure from the country. In particular, he was shocked when it was announced that he only found out about it 3 months after leaving the country. And this fact was covered up by the prosecution. To relieve the sorrow of their son who died unfairly, the victim's family repeatedly asked for help from the country and the law. But the answer they always got back was, "It's not easy. There is no way unless the U.S. helps." The family then filed a lawsuit directly in the U.S. courts. 18 years after the incident, the Supreme Court's final decision got made. The Supreme Court said, "It has been proven beyond any doubt that Patterson murdered the victim." Patterson was sentenced, with the judge explaining that the court decided on a life sentence, but in view of the defendant's age of being under 18 at the time, the sentence will be 20 years in prison. As a child, I often heard the phrase, "Ignorance is bliss," as it's better not knowing than to know at all. Let's take fast food, for example, as it's the perfect representation of ignorance. People constantly eat from them not knowing what's going on behind the scene or how the food they are pushing down their throats are made. My name is Miles Baker, and I used to be a health inspector. I saw firsthand what goes on behind the scenes of a particular fast food restaurant, and even if it's a bit late, I have decided to share my story with all of you today. It happened on the 7th of May, 2016. I was called and given the task to do a health inspection on a strange Burger King joint that was located on the outskirts of town. I accepted the task and I made my way out there. It was a long drive, but I eventually got there. Due to the distance, I expected the place to be empty and deserted. But when I entered, I was baffled as the place was brimming with customers. I watched them as they gluttonously devoured huge amounts of burgers and kept ordering more. I just assumed that the people who lived around these parts were really hungry, as that was the only explanation my mind could think of. A man then walked up to me and said, "Good morning, Mr. Miles. My name is Maxwell Adams. I'm the manager. We've been expecting you." He had a huge smile on his face as he introduced himself, but I could tell that he was forcing it. It was also pretty obvious that he didn't want me here, but I didn't care, as I knew I had a job to do, so I shook his hand and we began the inspection. The manager, Mr. Maxwell, began to take me around the building while assuring me that the restaurant was as safe and sanitary as it could be. I don't know why, but I didn't believe him, and as I could tell that there was something wrong about the place. So I began to dig deeper as I continued to look around. I walked into the kitchen and something caught my eye. I saw gray-like tissue substances, and I was wondering what they were, so I asked the manager, "What is this?" He hesitated for a while before saying one word with a huge smile on his face. "Meat." I immediately felt disgusted as I wasn't prepared to hear that, so I shouted, "Are you crazy? Meat isn't supposed to look like that. Are you feeding this to people? Where's this from?" Mr. Maxwell looked at me calmly before replying, "Regardless of the color, I can assure you that the meat we serve is pristine. And if you would calm down, I can personally take you to where we make our meat. The farm is just around the corner." I was baffled to hear that they produced their own meat nearby, but I figured since the restaurant was on the outskirts of town, it would be possible. So I agreed to follow him as I needed to get to the bottom of the matter before I reported it. It was a pretty quick drive as the farm was very close. The farm was really huge as, again, it was built on the outskirts of town. As soon as we arrived, I immediately asked the question, "I want to see the animals." Mr. Maxwell hesitated for a few moments before saying, "Fine, but just keep in mind that these aren't your normal day-to-day cows, as our cows are extremely special." I didn't know what he meant by that till he took me to where the cows were being kept. I tried to hold down the bile coming out of my throat as I saw the animals. The cows that were presented to me looked completely abnormal. Some of them had huge bodies and skinny legs that were so fattened that they couldn't even carry themselves. Some had extremely long bodies and deformities. Some were so obese, I couldn't tell if they were breathing or if they could even move. And most of them had started developing mutations. With one look at these animals, I knew that they were all suffering, as whatever they had done to them on the farm wasn't normal. I looked to Mr. Maxwell and I began to stutter, saying, "Oh, what are you doing to these animals?" Mr. Maxwell, who now had a sick grin on his face, replied me with, "We are making them meat befitting for kings." Confused, I kept quiet as he continued with, "We are Burger King, and we knew that normal cows won't do. So all we did is inject them with our homemade steroid hormone drugs and put them through a little radiation." I froze when I heard the words "steroid hormone drugs," as these were drugs that were used to increase the growth rate of animals. Now these drugs were widely used and approved by the FDA, but I knew something was wrong when the words "homemade" were added to it. Still confused, I looked at him and asked, "What do you mean by homemade? What's in the drugs that you inject into these animals, Mr. Maxwell? And are those chemicals FDA approved?" Mr. Maxwell then responded me with, "None of that matters, Mr. Miles. All that really matters is that we have created better meat, kingly meat." I was so furious now, so I shouted, "What the hell are you talking about? You're pumping these animals full of unapproved and illegal drugs just so that you can make them bigger? Look at them, Mr. Maxwell. These animals are suffering. You fatten them up to the point of explosion. And do you use their contaminated, discolored meat to feed people?
indirectly putting dangerous chemicals into their systems and threatening their health. This is wrong on so many levels. Can't you see that? Unfortunately, I can't, Mr. Miles. I don't know why you don't understand and see the beautiful thing we've accomplished here. By our hands, we have evolved these creatures, made them better than what they used to be. So what if the meat is discolored? I can assure you that it tastes divine. That's why the seats are always full in this establishment. We have refined these normal beasts into something better, and you should be able to see the greatness in that. When he was done with his speech, I looked at the man standing before me, and I was revolted. I never knew that human beings could be so sick. I then sternly said to him, "This is animal abuse, Mr. Maxwell, and I'm going to report it immediately." I turned my back to leave as I heard him say, "Well, I wouldn't want anything to happen to sweet Adeline, because if you report this, we will surely get our hands on her. And that's when you'd know the true definition of animal abuse." I froze when I heard the name of my 7-year-old daughter. I was about to lunge at him when he said, "You don't think we'd do our homework on you before you came here?" "Oh, please, Mr. Miles. We know everything about you. And if you ever decide to cross us, we will act in our own interest. You're just a lowly health inspector, and you must be stupid if you think you can go against a huge corporation. So keep your mouth shut and remember, ignorance is bliss. Have a good day, Mr. Miles." And with that, he walked away from me. I knew my hands were tied as everything he said was true. So I kept my mouth shut and I didn't tell a single soul. Due to the threats, it took me 2 years before I finally gathered the courage to tell my story. I took the necessary measures to keep me and my daughter safe as I asked for me and Adeline to be put under witness protection. I told them everything, and later during the weeks that followed, the closing down of a shady Burger King restaurant was all over the news. And for the first time in a long while, I finally felt at peace. I took a huge risk doing all this and sharing my story because I knew that even though ignorance is bliss, people always deserve to know the truth.